Morning, everybody. Good to see you. So I want to give you a little update. We sent you an email with a video a little over a week ago, and we were describing to our church family here that we were in a situation that wasn't a good situation. That's why we sent that video. We don't send videos like that often, as you're aware. And it was a financial, our backs were in essence against a financial wall, you could say. And within really 2 days, the video went out on Friday, and then on Sunday, one of the things just to note was that we had more people here last Sunday than we had had since Easter. So we thought, man, we should send videos more often, right? And just as a demonstration of how the Lord is working in not just your heart, you might be thinking as you watch that video and you've heard things going on in the church, you're thinking various responses of, wow, I want to be a part of that solution. I want to be praying for my church. I want to be involved in my church. You're not alone. Because hundreds of others came last week and they said, we want to be here as well. And the giving last week was spectacularly high. I'll just say that. After 2 days, really, of people thinking about how they should be responding to the need, we know that many people are still praying about how the Lord would be calling you to give more. We're grateful for that. We ask you to pray for our church, pray for our elders to have wisdom, and ask the Lord if you could be considering to give more. And we're already seeing that unfold. And I just want to recognize, we'll get into maybe some of the specifics later. We know it's only been 1 week, so it would really actually be only a partial solution at this point. But to recognize this, that we have really kind of seen in the last, I'd say, 9 days here, like an only God moment. Let's not skip over that, right? Because people, us, we have actually had our hearts touched, so we joyfully have given up what the world worships. That's not a small thing. And we've seen that response from many. And when we find ourselves individually with our back against the wall, and then God comes through, we need to tell that story. And when we as a church have our back against what seems like a wall and a crisis and an unsolvable problem, we're going to get into all of that today in today's sermon, by the way, and then God comes through, that's a moment to give glory to God and to thank Him. And so without giving all the, I don't have all the numbers, I don't have all the analysis, I'm not the financial guy, but trust me that the Lord is working powerfully in our church, and we've seen it last week, and we're going to continue to see it. So if you're new with us, and you're starting to kind of figure out who we are as a church, I just want to tell you, welcome to an amazing ride. We are seeing the Lord work in an amazing way. If you've been around for 30-plus years, maybe you even helped begin this church, what a great season to be part of Foothills Bible Church. We are not afraid of what is going on in our church, in our lives, in the world. We're not afraid, but we are very expectant of how the Lord is going to work because we see how He is already working. It's a great thing. So let's get into today's sermon. Today we're in week 4 of intersections. We're looking at how God intersects the life of Moses, and Moses is on a heart-expanding journey with God. So far we've learned and seen how Moses has learned that God is sovereign, how God sees all things, and that how God is patient. So today, we're going to see that God is Jehovah Sabaoth. Here's what that means, that He is the Lord of hosts. Another way that you could think of that is that He is the Lord of armies. And we'll explain that a little bit, we'll show that a little bit. I don't know if that's one of the little fill-ins that's on your page or not, but Jehovah Sabaoth. It's like the word Sabbath, but it has an O in it, and it means that He is the Lord of armies and powers. See, when you are at your end, when you don't have any strength left and you need deliverance, it's at that point that you can run to the Lord of hosts and the Lord of armies because He will and He is fighting for you. So in the life of Moses, we're going to skip over a pretty significant section of Exodus to see this. So last week in the story of Moses, we saw that God interacted with Moses, met him at the burning bush. We saw God's patience in that experience. Then at the very end of it, we didn't look at it, but at the very end, after that, his five excuses / responses to God's call, Moses said, yes, I'll go. I'll go to Egypt and I'll interact with Pharaoh. Pharaoh was resistant, by the way. He didn't, you know this, you've seen the movies, you've read the Bible before, you know the story of Exodus, you know about the 10 plagues. We're not looking at any of that. We're skipping over that, and we're gonna get now come to a pretty amazing section in chapter 13. So after the 10 plagues, Pharaoh finally relents and says, fine, go. Get out of here. You're destroying my country and my people. And in Exodus 13, we're going to pick up the story at verse 17, at that very moment. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. But God led the people around the way of the wilderness toward the Red Sea, and the people of Israel went out of the land of Egypt equipped for battle. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, for Joseph had made the sons of Israel solemnly swear, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones with you from here. And they moved on from Succoth and encamped at Etham, on the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them along the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, that they may travel by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night did not depart from before the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the people of Israel to turn back and encamp in front of Pi Hahiroth, between Migdal and the sea, in front of Baal Zephon. You shall encamp facing it by the sea, for Pharaoh will say of the people of Israel, they are wandering in the land, the wilderness has shut them in. All right, let's pause right there. What we're going to see as we read through these verses today is that we're going to see that the Lord is Jehovah Sabaoth through the construct of following the Lord. So the first thing I want to point out from these verses we've just read is that following God involves following. Is that creative? Some of you are actually thinking, gosh, I wish we had somebody smarter that could give these sermons. Following God involves following. Give me a break. Well, I point that out because number one, it's in the verses. And number two, I think often we have this concept, look, I'm following God. But in fact, if you were to look at your life, you would in honesty say, well, I'm saying I'm following God, but I'm actually not following God. I'm following my own plans. That's why I say following God involves following. In these verses, verse 17, it tells us that God did not lead them directly to the land of the Philistines. This would have been, by the way, the most direct route, the quickest route. In verse 18, it says, instead of leading them on the direct route, God led them to the wilderness. And it gave the rationale and the reason for it, which is pretty interesting. It says, basically, they would have seen war and they would have turned back. What that meant was that along the road from Egypt up around the Mediterranean, up into what we understand as Canaan and the Promised Land, the Philistines had a number of war posts along the way, because they guarded that road. And the Israelites would have seen the presence of military and the presence, obviously, of hostile environments, and they would have said, we don't want this, let's go back. In verse 21, it says how God led them. He led them, I love this, by the pillar of cloud during the day and then a pillar of fire by night. God was always showing them where to go. They were meant to follow that wherever God went. And then in verse 1 of chapter 4, it says, it really sets the whole thing up, where it says, God says, tell the people of Israel to turn back. So God is leading them in a very inefficient route here. It's a wasteful route, in fact. It's a route that now involves circling. A route that doesn't make any sense from the human perspective. I mean, first, they're going the desert route instead of the normal route. And as if the desert route wasn't bad enough, when it tells us they get to the border of the desert, they're at a place called Etham. Instead of continuing east, which would have been further away from slavery, further away from the threat, further away from Egypt, instead of going that way, God says, turn back. Turn away from freedom and turn back toward a trap. Does anybody feel like the Israelites? That your path that the Lord is leading you on is an unexpected route? Maybe a route through the what feels like the wilderness. Maybe you've got some speed bumps along the way. Maybe you have some very steep mountains along the way. Maybe it is a difficult path. And you look at your life sometimes and you think, clearly this cannot be the right path. Am I on the right path, Lord? Because you're looking, you're like, man, I've got difficulty. I have hardship. I have struggle. I have pain. I feel like my back is against the wall in so many ways. And it's at those times when we do wonder, wow, is this right? Look, regardless of where God leads, he always expects you to follow him. Don't doubt where he's leading you just because you're hitting a couple of speed bumps. Look, he sees everything and he's intentionally leading you to the exact place he wants you to be. The Apostle Paul, let's use him as an illustration of this. I love how this is shown in the life of the Apostle Paul. So in Acts chapter 16, you see this experience, verses 6 through 10. You can look at it later. I'm going to explain to you exactly what happens. Fascinating story, by the way. I have to use my little laser light to show it. I'm going to show it on this screen. That'll be to your right. Everybody look to the right screen. Even you, I'm sorry for you over here. You picked the wrong side today. So, second missionary journey of the Apostle Paul, right? So he's going up. This is a modern map today. I wanted to make it simple because it's a modern map, right? So Paul's going up on his missionary journey. He's revisiting cities here. What he wants to do is he wanted to go, what the scriptures say in verse 6 of chapter 16, he wanted to keep going. Oh, don't die on me. He wanted to go this way. Can you see? You can still see it. Oh boy, we'll figure that out. Now, here, you use my finger. Here's what he said. The scriptures say, as he wants to go basically to the west through here, that the Spirit of God prevented him, blocked him from going to the west. By the way, to the west would have been a revisit to a couple of cities that he had visited on his first missionary journey. He would have gone to two cities that he had already been to, one of them being Colossae, the second one being Ephesus. That's weird. If you're on that journey, you're thinking, of course I'll just go revisit those churches. Why not? Instead, he goes straight north, right? And then when he gets up north right here, he tries to go to the east over here. And the Spirit prevents him, blocks him, won't let him go. That's mysterious. It doesn't give us more information about it. So what does Paul do? He's like, well, he's in many ways, he's like us. He's doing his best to follow the Lord. He wants to be faithful. He was just a man, right? He's gotten blocked here. He's gotten blocked here. So he then, with his traveling, he moves over to the east. He goes down to the country. Basically, right around there, he's at a place called Troas, right on the coast. Little seaside, little village. And as he's in Troas, you know what happens? He gets a vision. He gets a vision of a man who lives over here in Macedonia. And basically, this guy's saying, come and visit us. We need help. So Paul was in the right place at the right time so that the Lord could give him this vision. So they immediately left from Troas, went across the Aegean Sea, and they start traveling up and down the coast here. I think we take for granted the implications of how the Lord led the Apostle Paul. Because when he got over to Macedonia, Paul visited Philippi, where he planted a church and later wrote the letter of Philippians to them. He also visited Thessalonica, planted a church, and later wrote the books of 1 and 2 Thessalonians to them. He traveled down the peninsula into Greece, visited Athens, kept going, visited Corinth, planted a church in Corinth, and later wrote the letters of 1 and 2 Corinthians to them. See, when a person follows wherever God leads, you never know what's going to happen as it changes people's lives. The Apostle Paul did not know any of that. He didn't know that was happening. All he knew was, I'm trying to go here, and the Lord's like, nope, you're not going there. What? Why? That seems like a great plan. Okay, I guess I'll go this way. Get up here. I want to go there. Nope, you're not going. Well, that seemed like a good plan too. Keep going over here. And then he's in the right spot at the right time for God to say, now I want you to do this. I want you to go there. Has the Lord been leading you down paths that you're resisting to go down? Assignments that the Lord has been giving you. We talked about assignments last week. Now look, the Lord only leads you down paths because he's setting you up for something miraculous. That's why he leads you. It might be something miraculous in your life. It might be something miraculous in somebody else's life. It might be something that's going to happen 5 years later or 10 years later or 20 years later. It might be something that happens like this week. But we're not in control of all that. But following God means that we follow where he leads. That's the first thing we see. And let's get back to the Israelites here. God has led them to a place. It's a physical place. It says in verse 3, the wilderness has shut them in. Some translations use the words hemmed in. You could, another way it's described is they are trapped. They are shut in, they are hemmed in, and they are trapped. Following God will normally involve God leading you to places where more trust is needed. We call these places unsolvable human problems. And that's the second thing we're going to see in these verses. Following God involves unsolvable human problems. We're going to pick up the story, chapter 14, verse 9. The Egyptians pursued them, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and his horsemen and his army, and overtook them encamped by the sea, by Pi Hahiroth, in front of Baal Zephon. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly, and the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than die in the wilderness." So the situation looks worse now. Not only are they hemmed in, the Egyptian army is coming. They can see them. Right? There's been a ton of research done, by the way, trying to identify the exact spot over in Egypt of where is this spot of like where they were trapped and where they were hemmed in. That might be, you can look online. There's some interesting stuff on there. I don't think that's the point, by the way. I think the point is this. God is intentionally leading them to a place where they are trapped. We've made a graphic of it for you. I use the map on this side now. So the scriptures tell us that they're on a beachhead. They've got the water in front of them. It describes the mountain range with as Migdol, And it also describes this word, it's hard to pronounce. You probably felt bad for me as I was saying it. Pi Hieroth, which means most likely like a canal or a mouth of water or maybe a bay of some kind. The point is this. They were trapped and surrounded by physical obstacles. Most likely there was one way in and one way out. And the Egyptians are coming down that way. There is no escape. God has purposefully led them to a place where they're facing an unsolvable human problem. And you know, God hasn't changed the way he leads his followers. The wisdom of God often looks like foolishness to men. I mean, think of how he leads us. If you're a follower of Jesus Christ, he leads us in some very surprising ways. He tells us to love our enemies. He tells us to consider others better than ourselves. I mean, who would willingly bow their knee to a deity that you can't see? Who'd give away their hard-earned money? I mean, who would worship a king who was crucified on a cross? See, many in the world would look at all of those examples and many more and say, well, only a fool would do those things. But God is not fazed by that opinion, and we shouldn't be fazed by it as well. God said, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. See, if you are facing an unsolvable problem right now, as you look at it and you think, man, I don't know how I'm going to solve this, you are in a perfect place. You are probably in the very place God wants you to be. Don't doubt. Don't let fear dominate your faith. Stand firm in your belief that God is the Lord of hosts and that he will fight for you. You're not alone. Look, everyone in ancient Egypt is about, as the story unfolds here, to see that the Lord is Jehovah Sabaoth. They don't know it's coming, but they are about to get their minds blown by what God does next. Because what we see then in number three is that following the God involves God solutions. As you're following God and you're going to face humanly unsolvable problems, that's fine because you're going to see God solutions. We're going to read now we're going to start in verse 13, and I'm going to read a pretty good chunk of this story because we see like the whole example of how God fights for his people. We're going to start in verse 13 of chapter 14. And Moses said to the people, "Fear not, stand firm, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians, whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you." You could mark that or underline it if you have your paper Bible with you. "And you have only to be silent. The Lord said to Moses, 'Why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward.'" Let's just stop for a second. Go forward. What does that even mean? There's nowhere to go. All right, back to the story. "Lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them. And I will get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." There's a psalm where it says, don't trust in chariots and don't trust in horses, but trust in the name of the Lord your God. That was their source of power. And he's saying here, he's going to get glory over all of that. Verse 19, "Then the angel of the Lord, who was going before the host of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. And there was the cloud and the darkness. And it lit up the night without one coming near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. and the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, the waters being on a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. The Egyptians pursued and went in after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And in the morning watch, the Lord, in the pillar of fire in the cloud, looked down on the Egyptian force and threw the Egyptian forces into a panic, clogging their chariot wheels so that they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee before Israel, for the Lord fights for them." That's the second time that's repeated in these verses. You can underline that one as well. Twice we're told that the Lord is fighting for them. Then verse 26, "Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand over the sea, and the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, upon their horsemen.' So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course when the morning appeared. And as the Egyptians fled into it, the Lord threw the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and of the host of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea. Not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left." We see two times in these verses, verse 15 and verse 25, that the Lord is fighting for them. He is Jehovah Sabaoth. How did he fight for them? Let me give you four examples. The first one, the angel of God moved from being in front of them to being between the Egyptians and the Israelites. That's verse 19. Then the cloud, the pillar of cloud, which is also described in verse 19, moved between them and the Egyptians. We're told in Exodus 13, verse 21, that that pillar of cloud was the presence of the Lord. While it's not dramatic, God was actively protecting his people as he fought for them. The third example is that he sent the strong east wind, parted the water, so that the Israelites could escape. Because they were hemmed in, but God provided a miraculous and unexpected route for them to get away. Then the fourth example is that he killed the Egyptian army by drowning them. God was defeating their enemies as he fought for them. And now what does this mean for us? Well, it means you never stand alone. Your desperate situation that you're facing is only one God act away from rescue. God fights for you. We seemingly need reasons to explain the wonder. Like, some can't accept anything except that which is defined by a rational interpretation, right? We want to master the sacred with our minds. And these are all our own attempts to make God like us. And God is not like us. See, if you come to the end of your strength and you need deliverance, then seek deliverance in God, the Lord of hosts. The name Jehovah Sabaoth, it is used over 285 times in the Bible. Sabaoth means an army going out to war. So when you put that with Jehovah, what it means is that the Lord is ruling over armies that go out to war. He has an army. He uses his army to fight on behalf of his people. And it isn't until we find ourselves failing and powerless that we realize our need to run to the Lord of hosts. See, this is the name for God for those people who find their resources inadequate. And they're in the midst of a struggle, right? This is the name of God to run to when there's no other help from the earthly perspective. It's not that you've stopped fighting yourself. See, for example, in the days of Ezekiel, the people had stopped fighting. They had totally given in to compromise, and they had settled into their captivity. And there's not one usage of the name of God, Jehovah Sabaoth, in the entire book of Ezekiel. See, in our lives, the battle that we're called to be fighting, the struggle that we are in is described as a spiritual battle. Ephesians chapter 6 assures us, really, that we're going to be in battles. And we can have confidence to trust in the Lord when we're in those battles, whatever those battles are. Ephesians 6, verses 11 to 13 describes it, where the Apostle Paul writes, "Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against the flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm." See, when you find yourself hemmed in, don't allow the enemy to distract you. When you find yourself in an unsolvable situation from your human perspective, don't let your fears cloud your judgments. Get God's perspective on the battle. God says, put on the full armor. God says, stand firm. God says, pray like crazy and wait to see his deliverance. Knowing God as Jehovah Sabaoth will expand your faith like it did for Moses. Remember, we're on a journey with Moses, seeing how his own heart is being expanded as he sees more and more and more and more of God's character. Step by step, God is developing Moses. And that's the way he works with us as well. Which brings us to our fourth observation from these verses, that following God will always involve deeper and deeper places of dependency. God's always leading us to deeper places of trust. And he does that by taking us to bigger problems that we're facing. Look at what it says in verse 30 and 31 in chapter 14. We'll wrap up this chapter. "Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians, so the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses." See, after they saw God fight for them, the Israelites were in awe. Their faith was renewed. See, in hindsight, they could see how God was working all of the details for his glorious end. This is the way God works even in our own lives to move us to deeper and deeper and deeper levels of dependence on him. The way I see it is that God has a developmental plan that looks like this. Number one, God leads his people to face unsolvable problems. This is what you could call your freak out moment. You might complain, you might cry, you might grumble, you might become in despair, you might try to escape reality, but you are freaking out. Step two, God shows up. He fights for you. He provides for you. He comforts you. I mean, there's a variety of ways where he shows up and delivers. And the reaction from that is that we have peace and we have comfort. We worship him. We're in awe of him. And then step three is, well, you trust him a little bit more the next time you face an unsolvable problem. But then usually what happens those three steps, they repeat themselves. You face another unsolvable problem, and then we freak out again. And then God shows up again, and then we worship him, and we're wowed again. And then he takes us a little bit deeper in dependency, so that hopefully that cycle looks different like 20 or 30 years into our walk of faith than it did year one. See, the Israelites, they're experiencing and modeling this. In the moment that we've just read today, the Israelites, they were doubtful and they were afraid and they were complaining to the Lord and to Moses about the dilemma that they were in. They were not happy about being trapped with the army coming after them. They had no faith. God's not telling us this story as a model so that we can just always be rescued even though we have no faith. That's not the point of this story. He's showing us how he's going to develop them deeper and deeper and deeper in their own faith, and that's how he does it in our life as well. In this moment, as we're looking at the Israelites, they're spiritual infants. And God was gracious to show up and rescue them despite their lack of faith. But see, what God's trying to do in their lives is to show them his perfect character so that they'll trust him more. God has a big plan for these people. He's got a big plan. He wants them to go into the promised land and take it. But they're spiritual infants. He's trying to grow them step by step, saying, look, I see it all. I'm sovereign over it all. I'm going to take you to a place where you think you're doomed, and then I'm going to come through and rescue you. And then you're going to be in awe of me. And then you're going to walk in faithfulness. And then you're going to come up to another point. You're going to feel like you're doomed. And then I'm going to show you more of my character. You're going to trust me more. And then you're going to walk in faithfulness with me. And then you're going to face another unsolvable problem. This is what we see in the coming chapters throughout Exodus. Problem after problem after problem after problem. God's trying to develop them to grow their faith. But he can't do it unless they're facing unsolvable problems. And that's the way he does it in our life as well. What do you do when you feel like you're being hemmed in, trapped, with nowhere else to go? For every one of you who feels like you're hemmed in right now, you might be hemmed in relationally, in your job, in a health situation, spiritually, financially. You feel like, man, I'm walking and I am trapped. For everyone who feels like that, let me just assure you, the best thing I can tell you to do right now, the best next step for you is to turn to the Lord in prayer. I have no other solutions for you. The scriptures have no other solutions for you. And so let's do that now. Let's turn to the Lord in prayer. And as we're doing this, what I'd like you to do is to have in your mind the circumstance and the situation where you feel like you are trapped, an obstacle that you're facing where you feel hemmed in. Because what we're going to do is we're going to guide you through a prayer time where you can bring that situation to the Lord. Would you bow your heads, please? To begin, remind God by just telling him, all right, Lord, this is my situation. This is what I'm facing right now. He knows it, but it's good for us to acknowledge it to him so that we can get the dialogue going. And then tell him, Lord, I trust you. I trust you because I know that you see it. I trust that you have either allowed it or planned it. I trust that this is going to bring more glory to you. And I ask that that happens. And in your strength right now, I stand firm. I don't give in to doubt, and I'm not going to let fear creep its way into my heart. I stand firm in your power. Please, God, work in a powerful, mighty way. Fight for me. I will stand and wait for your deliverance in faith. I don't see where deliverance is coming, but I will stand and I will wait for it. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.